Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this October 19th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. We are joined right now by our good friend, Matt Lippert, ag agent with her UW Extension Wood County. Matt, it's been too long. How you been?
Long time no see.
Yeah. Matt, of course, joining us back-to-back weeks here. I believe that is a record. I don't think anybody's had to put up with me 2 weeks in a row from Extension.
Oh, I haven't.
You haven't, for sure. I do appreciate the time. In all seriousness, thanks for pitch hitting for us, Matt. Thanks for being in. Do appreciate any chance to talk ag, especially with somebody who knows what that you do. Somebody actually, not just somebody who knows the industry, but is actually in the industry, is a farmer themselves. We don't get enough opportunities to talk about farming, to talk about the ag industry, which is a little silly when you think about it, considering how vital it is to our everyday commerce and lives. So appreciate the time, Matt, and thank you for your the knowledge that you bring to our conversations and the things that you put up with me that I bring up because I find interesting, because I could not be farther from this world. But I love learning from you and learning more about it. The thing that I came across that I'd like to start with today, if you don't mind, Matt, is this article that I came across from a Wisconsin farmer working to save an endangered cow breed. The Kerry cow comes from Ireland, and there are only a few hundred of them left there. There are only about 45 in North America at all. So there is a young man, J.T. Price, working to grow the population at his farm in Windsor. Milk from most Kerry cows has A2 proteins, which are safe for people with milk protein allergies. So she's a pretty special cow. Not that all cows aren't special. We love all cows. But these are a very unique cow. For one, as a city boy, Matt, I will tell you, and I'm going to be honest with the audience about this, I knew that there were different cow breeds. I never thought about the milk being different. Like, it makes perfect sense, of course. If a cow is different, certainly the DNA of a cow is going to make the milk a little bit different. But I thought that was just fascinating. And another part of this that I had not thought much about is farming in Europe. Like, that's got to be a lot of the ancestral work of a lot of the farming we do today in America, I would imagine. So it just got my mind going down a rabbit hole of the connection of European farming and farming here in this country. So if we have a chance, I wouldn't mind touching on that if that's something that you're interested in talking about. But let's focus on the Kerry cow for a second and the different cow species, if you will.
Sure. So there's hundreds of breeds of cattle. We tend to group them into beef cattle and dairy cattle. Mm-hmm. In other countries where they're less mechanized, there'd be draft cattle, right? There'd be cattle that are used to pull wagons and so mm-hmm. forth. And historically, before we've got quite as specialized as we are, there were dual-purpose cattle. There'd be animals that were relatively good milk producers, but had good meat characteristics as well. So they weren't outstanding in either thing. They were kind of across. So mm-hmm. so we have hundreds of breeds, and you talked about history. A lot of them come from Europe. There's a Brahma-type cattle. We see India has tropical countries where there's a lot of heat. There's different genetics there, mm-hmm. and we've developed crosses with those for the southern U.S., maybe just a percentage of them. I think you sprung this on me a little bit. I think they'd mm-hmm. be Boss, that's the genus Indicus, which would be the Brahma-type cattle, or there'd be Boss Taurus, which would be mainly the European-type cattle. Mm. Obviously, we've got this in every phase of agriculture, that the commercial-produced animals are, it's about 90%, I guess it's maybe not quite, 85% of dairy cattle in the U.S. are Holsteins. So obviously they deliver what modern dairy producers need. You know, we've talked about it's not really easy to be a dairy farmer. It's not like you... there's a lot of money left over when you're done. So you get pretty particular. So Holsteins are exceedingly good at producing a lot of milk. Mm. And so we have basically most of the dairy cattle in the country are Holstein based.
Okay.
And even there's about five, World Dairy Expo just got over 2 weeks ago. We have our officially recognized purebred dairy cattle association breeds. Mm-hmm. And Kerry wouldn't be one of those, right? They'd be they'd be trivial enough that they're kind of a breed. They're not just focused on being dairy cows. Mm-hmm. So we have our Holsteins, exceedingly good milk production, fairly large. So their male offspring, or when you cull a cow, they have some value yet for the beef market, but they're not bred for that. So they're too tall a little bit. The muscle structure is the wrong shape a little bit. So they're not like their counterpart in the beef industry would be probably Angus.
Okay.
Angus doesn't have quite the domination in beef, but pretty, I mean, you know that you can buy an Angus burger just about anywhere. So then the other extreme in dairy cattle would be Jerseys. And they're probably taking up maybe not quite 10% of the dairy cattle in the U.S. And they're the opposite of Holsteins. They're pretty small. So it costs less to rear them because they're just smaller framed. Mm-hmm. They're not growing as quite as big of an animal. And they milk quite a bit less, but for their size, they still milk very well. So that's why they're the second most popular breed. And they are really good if you're making cheese or butter because their milk is high in fat and protein, higher than Holsteins. Mm-hmm. So those have kind of been the two main breeds. Then we see a lot of interest in crossbreeding because you get some hybrid vigor with that. So where does Kerry fit in this? Well, they're heritage breed. I certainly think the man in Wisconsin that's trying to maintain the breed, that's a noble cause. But, you know, the commercial market isn't really too concerned if Kerry's make it or not.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to touch on with
you. So they're as I understand them, they're pretty small. They're almost like a miniature. And I think a little slower to mature. So if you're trying to be on a farm and you're going to get a yield and also quality of meat or milk as fast as possible, a small, slow maturing creature doesn't do that well.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if you want to be a homesteader and milk your own cow in the backyard and eat lawn clippings, a small cow might be easier for the grandkids to work with. You might not have to buy as much feed or make as much manure. So there's probably a niche for that, but it's not commercial. It doesn't fit in the commercial world.
Yeah. Okay. I'm thank you for that, Matt. That was one of there was two angles I wanted to go on this. One of them was that the idea of, because since I was a kid, I've been hearing that we need more farmers. We need more people in the ag industry. I was curious that if this isn't one of those things that would work, having smaller farms, having a smaller farm or more condensed farm or more one that is just centered around one particular thing. Now, economically, I don't know how that works. I don't know if it's even possible or anything. But I immediately thought of Ben and Jerry's. Ben and Jerry's probably the most popular ice cream there is, and they have been for a long time. But they realized some years back there's a big audience they're not hitting, so they started coming out with like vegan and non-dairy ice cream and those things. Yeah. And boom, their sales go even more through the roof. They're not only not the biggest game; they're the biggest game in the world now when it comes in terms of ice cream. Just from
Do you like ice cream?
Yes, I love ice cream. Yes, big ice cream guy. Half my body weight probably is ice cream.
Okay.
So when it comes to that, I thought, oh well, here's something that the ag industry might be to me as a layman and completely on the outside of this looking in, like, well, I wonder if this isn't an angle for our farmers, for our ag industry, to be able to focus on one particular avenue or to be able to expand your avenue to the, because when I see this cow, I mean, for one, I don't want to see any animal going endangered or lose an animal, but especially when I read that they create a milk that's safe for people with milk protein allergies. If you're in the milk industry, you're a dairy farmer, there's a part of the audience you've never been able to hit.
Have you heard of A2 before?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So it's on the grocery shelf already. You can just about any store nowadays. It started New Zealand, Australia is where the focus on this started. And the contention is that this A1 gene has... And I'm going to say contention, because you'll have people argue that none of that is, they'll argue none of that is true.
Mm-hmm.
But the A1 gene is, there's these stories that it's a mutation that they can go back to when it started, and it just coincidentally was it didn't cause the highly productive breeds to be more highly productive. It's just, it just was in those breeds. And as we've selected, it's come along with the game, and we've had more A1. So I've been hearing about this for 10 or 15 years now, this A1, A, well, it's really very simple to select against. So you know that there's enough A2 in the world that if there's only 45 Kerry cattle in the U.S. and 200 in Ireland, and there, and still you can go just about any store anywhere and find A2 milk. There's other cattle that have that trait.
Gotcha.
And you take those big names. So, and I'm going to throw another one in there, Guernsey. So, but take the Holsteins and Jerseys. It was 10 years ago. It was like, oh, all, any other breed other than Holstein is better for A2 than Holsteins. And so if you open a sire catalog now, if you wanted to start your herd and make ice cream and sell to the neighbors and say it's A2 milk, you would have to test all your cows and make sure they were homozygous for this A2 gene.
Gotcha.
Okay. And if you had 100 cows just randomly selected, today I would say probably more than half, maybe three quarters of them would qualify right away. So it's not that rare.
Right, right.
And what has happened is, since it's just one gene, and it doesn't seem to cause any downside. It's not like, if you select for A2, they milk less. It doesn't seem that's the thing. Or they're less fertile. Or it just seems to be just along for the ride. It's just there. So rapidly, the genetic offerings that our farmers are using are all A2. So that's not going to save the Kerry breed. But because Holsteins are rapidly becoming more A2. Now, any farm that's maybe already using all A2, you know, cows live to be 10 or so. So they're not, you have to be 100% A2 to be certified. So a farm that's not actually trying is not going to be there. But it wouldn't take them, if there was a decree that henceforth all milk should be A2, we could do it pretty fast because we're the market is driven that way already.
Interesting.
Now, I mentioned the word Guernsey.
Yeah.
So you had to go back even before I was born, but that was in central Wisconsin, in many areas, that was the number one breed. We think about how prominent Holsteins are. Holsteins, my grandfather had Holsteins, but a lot of people had Guernseys. And that breed has declined in numbers. It's not, it was viable, and it's become less viable. And people hear me say that sometimes and say, well, you just don't like Guernseys, you know. And it's just, I'm just stating the economic reality. They haven't done as well. Well, have you ever heard the brand Golden Guernsey?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah. So Guernseys are noted for having more A2 typically than Holsteins, which we already had that discussion. Maybe not the case anymore. But there's just a way they process vitamins. I'm challenged to say which one now, but they leave more pigment in their body fat. So when you have when you handle a Guernsey carcass, instead of having white fat around the muscle, which is what consumers like, it'll be yellowish. So that's like a downside for the Guernseys when they harvest them and cut them open and they're yellow fat, people don't want that.
Yeah.
But you notice all your butter is yellow.
Yeah.
And we actually, butter is really pure. Butter is, you take whole milk and you you basically centrifuge it and you separate out the fat. And the better job you do that, you get butter. But if your cows are in nice, lush spring pastures, there's more pigment that they consume, and that fat will have more pigments, and the butter will be yellower. In the middle of the winter, stored feed, fermented feed, dry feed, grain, Holsteins don't have that that pigment conversion going on, like the Guernseys. It's pretty white. So actually, most butter you consume is got a little, it's a natural coloring. It's not artificial coloring. It's annatto.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so because consumers want it to be yellow.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and we have that with cheese, right? There's you can go to the store and get white cheddar, and you can get yellow cheddar. And different parts of the country have preferences, but here in the Midwest, we all thought that cheddar just naturally was yellow. Well, it goes back to historically that that peak most productive time in the pastured cow year would be in the spring when everything was lush and everything was a little yellower. So once they figured out consumers like yellow, we'll give them yellow. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But so this Guernsey breed has not developed for various reasons, not as productive as Holsteins, but they are the king of making naturally pigmented butter. Milk, dairy products.
Interesting.
So, people that want to, I want 10 cows, and I'm going to have my own churn, and I'm going to market my own butter. If they'd call me up, I'd say, maybe you should think about Guernseys. Because the end product they're making, I'm not saying it's healthier for you, or that has more A2 or less A2, I'm just saying it's yellower.
Ah, okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
It's naturally yellower. And, so when you're talking about the poor Kerry breed, and let's not that go extinct. I was just listening to a man on radio talk about apples. And, you know, every apple seed produces, because the bees do their cross-pollination, every apple seed, so when you eat an apple and there's 10 seeds in there, however, every one of them could be the founder of a unique apple variety because they're all genetically different. So there's obviously millions then, right?
Yeah.
So there we can't protect or discover. So how do you get a Macintosh? How do you get a Honeycrisp? Is you have a rootstock, which is developed to be especially good at the rooting part of the apple tree, the winter hardiness, how strong the stem is for wind and so forth. But then you graft on the top. The apple variety you get. So that's how all Honeycrisps or Cortlands or Macintoshes are all the same because they're cloned. So they're all, that's how you get that consistency. So we obviously that's true. Every individual cow is a unique individual, but we kind of have lines that are pretty similar.
Yeah.
So Guernseys are a great example of a line that has been less successful, but maybe its time is coming again because there is interest, as you said, in as some things consolidate, other things, we have more farmers markets than we used to have. We have more discerning, more demanding consumers that don't want generic wholesale Velveeta or, or whatever. They want their own kind of artisanal thing. So we got both trends going in agriculture. Let's make the cheese plant bigger, output more, the product more consistent. Let's drive down that cost. We have that. And then we have the other end. Well, James will pay twice as much for that cheese or butter if it's the way he wants it. We got both of those going.
Do the, both of these things happening, do you think that that helps the industry? That helps our farmers, that these things are going on? And it seems, I'm hearing commerce. I'm hearing, you know, that's what I'm hearing through a lot
of
this.
Well, it's life. I mean, it's helpful or not, it's the way it is. But yeah, I think certainly I don't think people were happy with, we have this thing about food, Wonder Bread, you know, is just whiter than white and softer than soft, and it had nothing in it. And when they invented that shortly after World War II or whatever, it was like, this is amazing. And then we recoiled against it and said, no, that's not amazing. So it's good that consumers can be particular and push the market. So actually in the U.S. right now, we... you know, butter was bashed for decades that it was killing people, it was causing heart attacks. And lately it's been like, no, it's sugar. It's not, it's not butter.
Right.
So if whichever is true, butter is all of a sudden very popular again. Mm-hmm. And we actually struggle to make enough butter. We make plenty of milk, so much milk that we export the non-fat part of it to other countries. But we tend to periodically need to import fat because Americans, we're just not making enough. That's happening right now. This fall, butter reached Chicago Mercantile Exchange commodity butter, $3.50 a pound.
I did not see that. When I saw that number, I did not believe it. I had to do a double take.
So, but Americans, we're not going to buy our butter from India. We want all our imported butter, typically. We want that all to come from Ireland. Because those are pastured cows. Ireland, the way they dairy in Ireland is never gets very hot and never gets very cold. So the grass grows, even though they're north of us, they don't really have snow in the winter. Mm-hmm. They just, it gets really dark because further north you are more. But the pastures live year round. And so they have a grass-based dairy industry and they make really nice butter. It's called Kerry. Kerry, we're making a full circle.
Yep, we went full circle. Nice.
The county of Kerry, it's a county in Ireland. And it's not, Kerry Gold is a very popular butter. You have to pay more for it than American butter. But it, when you cut a stick, if it's 72 degrees in your room, it'll be softer. The however the fats are developed in the rumen of the cow, you know, if you've ever learned about fats, you have fats and oils and they all have different melting points. Well, the fat of a cow is in a range, but it's not all in the same point. And so Irish butter is yellower and softer than its American cousin. And we like that. We like the yellow and we like the soft. Because actually that was one of the big pluses for old days in margarine is it would cut easier than your butter. If you kept your house pretty cool or you just pulled it out of the refrigerator, the butter was harder than the consumer would really want.
I can remember my grandmother doing that, taking it out. Like we'd be using it an hour later. She'd take an hour before or whatever to let it sit. I forgot about that.
She probably liked Kerry Gold.
She might have. Yes, she might have. I have really been enjoying this conversation, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us again and for hanging out with us talking about this. I have to let the audience know. Matt and I come into this and we're like, well, what should we talk about today? I didn't know that we'd create a whole show out of this. I didn't know that we were going to talk the whole time about it.
I saw you looking at your watch. It happened.
It was very cool. It was very. Okay. I know that I could. I'm not alone. I learned some stuff from you today, and I always appreciate that. Always interesting to hear not only what certain factors and certain details about this industry, but the behind the scenes, if you will, or again from the mouth of a farmer, from somebody who not only knows their stuff but cares. You're invested in this. This is your life. This is who you are. This is a big part of you and everything. So to be able to hear this information from you, it has extra weight to it. And I appreciate that.
Well, just ask me about the different traits of butter anytime.
We'll go another hour. We can fill another hour out of that. Appreciate that, Matt. I know that we talked about a lot today, though, too. And there might be some follow-up questions from our audience out there. If people want to reach you, they have follow-up questions about some of the things we've talked about today. How can they reach you?
Yes. So I am in the courthouse. Actually, I split my time between Neillsville and Wisconsin Rapids. The Extension office has a website. So I tell you to Google it, Wood County UW Extension, University of Wisconsin-Madison Extension. We have our phone numbers on there. We have our emails on there. So
great way to connect with you and our the rest of our friends at Extension. And do me a favor, please say hi to your team over there at Extension. And again, appreciate your pitch hitting, filling in today, Matt. Thanks for the time.
No problem.
We'll have more Midday Magazine for you tomorrow right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.